Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to the Quarantine Break Podcast. I'm your host, Simon Ward, and this is the socially distanced tea break with extraordinary people. So, episode 14, and by the looks of it, we've come a long way together. And yet, as I look at my Fitbit from the past year, I've gone absolutely nowhere. Fortunately, today's episode is great, and it's with chef, broadcaster, and restaurateur Simon Rimmer.
Going past the sites that are closed is quite heartbreaking. You know, the same with anybody's business. It's not just my business, it's not just me. You know, whatever your business is, if your premises are closed and you don't have the people and that whole kind of beautiful kind of business that you had isn't functioning, it's very, very hard to take.
Simon has been on my wish list for this podcast since day one, and I was so thrilled he agreed to do this, because not only is Simon brilliant on telly, he's also a restaurateur, and I really wanted to ask him about his experiences of that during this pandemic. And we'll get onto that all very, very soon. But first, as always, I started by asking Simon how he takes his tea.
If I have the time to have a proper cup of tea, then I like it in a pot. I like it Earl Grey, and then just a little splash of milk. But I don't mind whether I go milk first or tea first. I that doesn't worry me at all. But I do like a hot mug as well.
Oh, see, now I've not asked a chef this before, possibly because it's a stupid question. But obviously when you cook for someone, there's this expectation it's going to be good. And I imagine there's that bit of pressure on you. But when you make a cup of tea, do people expect that to be the best tea they've ever had?
You see, I have enough pressure in my own head about whenever I make anything for anybody. Now you've added tea into that list. Because the thing about chefs is when you work in a kitchen, you're just grateful if someone brings you a brew, whether it be tea, coffee, warm Ribena. You really, really don't care just getting a brew given to you. And so it also means that chefs, generally speaking, will drink any kind of drink, warm particularly, in any kind of format in reality, which is why I sort of said, if I have the time, that's what I like for my tea.
You briefly touched on your tea recipe there, and we are calling it a recipe. I'm determined to get a recipe out of this podcast. So talk me through how you make that perfect tea.
Well, I'd warm the pot. So it depends on my mood as to whether I think I'm going to have a lot of tea or I just want a sort of a cup and a half. If it's a cup and a half, I've got a little grey teapot, which is sort of one of those kind of nice little shaped Scandi ones. And that's kind of pretty. It gives me a cup and a half.
Lovely.
And if not, I've got a bigger one, then I've got a big daft, sort of like a granny flowery teapot that I quite like. But the principle's the same. Boiling water into the teapot, swirl it around, put the lid on, leave it for a couple of minutes, then tip that away, put the tea bags in, and then I obviously, because I'm a poncy middle-class middle-aged man, I have a tap that gives me constant boiling water. I don't have a kettle anymore. Fill it up. Then also, as I fill the teapot up, I'll also fill up my mug and let that warm as well. Let it sit for a couple of minutes, and then tip it away. And then the sound of tea pouring from a teapot into a mug or a cup is one of the nicest sounds, I think, on God's earth.
Beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, so nice. I'm glad that's been the first recipe on this show. You know, we all went through that sourdough phase. No one wants another sourdough recipe, but a tea recipe, a really good tea recipe. And again, I'm calling it a recipe.
Well, see, the other thing you could do, more so with coffee than tea, but it does work with tea as well, is if you put a cinnamon stick in the teapot, it just gives you, it takes your tea to a slightly different place.
I mean, that's incredible. I mean, we've learned something on this podcast already. I mean, we could end it here. And that would be a great one.
Yeah.
But Simon, thank you for joining me today. When I did the final episode of the last run, it was the end of June. And Simon, let me paint you a picture of what June was like, because it does feel like that was about 8 million years ago now. Yeah. Jake Humphrey was on the show. We were talking about getting our first haircuts in months. Britain was planning to meet people again. And of course, just days later, Liverpool would win the league. It felt like a time full of optimism.
Yeah, it did. It's funny though, because that whole thing about us winning the league, I remember when the first lockdown happened in March and there was talk of the season being abandoned. Now, I've waited 30 years for Liverpool to win the league. You know, I was just a young man then. And the thought that they might have abandoned the season was terrifying. And then, of course, then there was the talk that, well, if they abandon it, we'll just give it to Liverpool. And think, oh, the grief that we would continue to get as Liverpool fans then. Then, of course, when they won the league, it was fantastic. But I must admit, it was slightly bittersweet. I loved watching Jordan lift it. But because I go the game a lot, not being there, having waited 30 years, was also kind of pretty tough, really. And then, you know, Jürgen saying, and again, coming back to that time of June, Jürgen saying, as soon as we can, we'll have a procession around the streets, blah, blah, blah. That is never going to happen now, is it? You know, we know that that will never happen.
If Liverpool don't win the league this year, and God willing, in September, things will be a bit different. But that would be weird, wouldn't it?
Yeah, very, very weird. We haven't won the league on this season, and then we do a celebration for the previous season. Yeah, And also, at the moment, I can't see us winning the league. I don't want to be the pessimistic Liverpool fan, but I think it's going to be tough.
I remember when Liverpool won the league, and it was a great moment, but also crushing. Since about February, I'd been planning that weekend and what that was going to be. I was going to be in the city. It was going to be incredible. I had my hotel ready. And then this thing happened. I know it's not the most important thing that's happened in the past 10 months, but oh, I really, every now and again, I get a bit angry about that.
Yeah, do you know what? And I do as well. And it's that thing that's quite difficult to say out loud, because you're getting angry and upset about kind of football, which really isn't that important. And I kind of get that, but it's such a core through my existence, you know. And, you know, I'm 57 now, and I am still as passionate and get as angry and upset when we don't win as I did when I was 7. And I think, you know, that is that whole thing. And it's even now, like, you know, when we're talking now, Liverpool are playing tonight and they're playing Burnley. And I'm anxious because they've not been playing very well. I'm really, really anxious that we might not win tonight. And I think, I'm a grown man. I've got bigger responsibilities and bigger worries at the moment. But it's there.
Yeah.
It's at the forefront of my thought process today.
June was obviously that incredibly optimistic time. We're in January now. My hair's grown again. And as you say, Liverpool can't score at the moment. A lot happened in that middle bit. Sitting here today, how are you feeling about everything?
Pretty rubbish, actually. The first lockdown, I think, like everybody, I didn't think it was going to last. I thought, you know, I'll have 6 weeks of this. Well, the weather's quite nice. I'm quite glad I'm having a bit of a reset.
Yeah.
But this one I'm finding really, really tough. You know, I have 12 restaurants. So we have all of those that are either closed or doing a little bit of takeaway. We've already had to lay off over 100 people. So I've told 100 people that they no longer have a job. I think I'm very fortunate that Sunday Brunch has continued to broadcast, because that's given me at least 2 days focus every single week. But on a day-to-day basis, I struggle a little bit. You know, I'm used to being so frantically busy. I always used to like the fact that I'm a proper list writer. Every day I would write a list. And if I had 10 things on the list, if I got 7 of them done, that was a good day. But then the next, we would go on to the next day's list, and so we're on. Now my list consists of 3 things. So I'm thinking, right, how do I stretch these 3 things out when because I get up early every morning. I get up at about 6:30 every day. How do I stretch these 3 things from 6:30 in the morning until bedtime? And I'm finding it tough. I'm finding that, you know, I don't think I've got any kind of serious mental health issues, but you see that kind of that constant battle with yourself to kind of, because I'm a very positive person, to stay upbeat and not allow yourself to kind of, to just fester and sit in front of the TV watching garbage, really.
I think for me, when London moved into tier three in December, that was the moment I think it really, really hit me hard, because it sort of felt, I think up until that point, that we were pushing that boulder up a hill and that we were getting to the top of the hill. The vaccine had been announced. It felt, again, a time for optimism. And then we got to the top of the hill and it just, we just all realized there was a bigger mountain behind it.
Yeah, huge. And I think it's, and I think that's one of the big problems, isn't it? That you don't, you can't see an end to this. You know, we're all guessing. We're completely and utterly guessing our future on big and small things. You know, on the small things, on the face of it, is the ability to kind of just go and sit down, have a cup of coffee somewhere and read the paper, which, you know, is a real kind of treat. To all the bigger things about kind of like, you know, our mental health, our children's education, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you think, okay, will it be March? Will it be April? Will it be May? If the lockdown sort of stops in March, how will it stop? Is it going to be the same for everybody? You know, and I think it's that that I'm sitting there going, I can't imagine the day, for example, coming back to football, which I'm sure we'll do a lot over the, over the next hour. I can't imagine the day when I could be at Anfield and there's 60,000 people in there, or go and see a gig, or sit in a busy restaurant, or sit in a busy room. I can't see where that can happen. I think that's really tough.
Going back to that first lockdown, because I think, it's felt like we've been pushing boulders constantly, constantly through the year. I think firstly, with all that boulder pushing, I'd hope I'd look less doughy. Thank you, lockdown. I did start to reach a point where I'd sort of gone through my mountain sadness, also a good name for a podcast, and I'd accepted the situation again. But yeah, this January has felt really, really tough, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. I mean, the weather is clearly makes a big difference as well. You know, again, it sounds sort of very shallow to say that, but, you know, in the first lockdown, you think, well, I'll sit in the garden, I'll do some work in the garden. I'll kind of, you know, I'll have a little nap in the garden. Oh, I've got a bit of a tan. This is quite nice. I'll go for a walk. It's sunny. Whereas, you know, last night we had like, you know, a snowstorm in Manchester, and it is so much harder. And I think just trying to stay positive is so, so tricky. And also, I think because we know what's happening a little bit now, but we don't know when it's going to end. Coming back to that, you know, I think you look at it and go, this is so tough, you know, and all the things that on the face of it maybe don't matter, like going out for dinner, going to a pub, going to see a live gig, going to see football, but they do, you know, they're the essence of our lives, really, you know. And of course, things like, you know, people's health and people staying alive is the most important thing. But as human beings, we're made up of so many component parts, and the bits that make you complete are the real ones. And things like, you know, I've hardly seen my parents in the last 12 months. You know, they're 87 and 83, and, you know, they're kind of, they've isolated all this time. You think, this, it's so tough. You know, these are their golden years, and they're missing out on times that they should be having fun in.
I have to say, I feel exactly the same way about this as you, Simon. Christmas, I think for that reason, was really tough this year. Yeah. Obviously, restrictions came in and it changed all our plans in a lot of ways, but we had accepted quite early on that we weren't going to meet up for Christmas, that we were just going to do things like video chats. We were quite fortunate, actually, because just before first lockdown, we got my dad one of these devices where he could video chat with us. I say video chat, it's in the same way as all 82 year olds use video chat. We just get brief glimpses of either the top of his forehead or maybe a bit of his chin. But like you say, you know, you kind of want to spend that time with the people that you love.
Yeah.
And Christmas felt like such a time when you really, really wanted to be with people.
Yeah, I mean, my mum and dad, it was almost a relief when we said to them, listen, we really don't think that we should take a chance on this. So we went over to see them in the morning, and even though it was cold, then we were all in the garden and they were in the conservatory at the back. And then we almost had like the line that we passed over presents, like we were exchanging hostages kind of thing. And and my mum every year, she makes the most amazing trifle, and it's like, it's a high days and holiday thing, but the Christmas one is always the best one. So we had champagne and trifle for breakfast on Christmas morning, did that with my mum and dad. Then we came back to Manchester, and it actually worked out pretty well. But I think because we structured it, I felt like, you know, we'd actually had a really sort of nice bit of quality time with them. But yeah, it was tough. Christmas felt like, I felt as well that I got angry about Christmas as a restaurateur. I got really angry that we were forced to close, and then I go down to London on a Saturday to do Sunday brunch. And then I got down there in the afternoon and thought, oh, you know what? I'm just going to nip into John Lewis, just across from the hotel. I go and buy some Christmas cards. And I got really angry because my industry has invested time, money, and advice on being COVID friendly, COVID secure, looking after customers, looking after my staff, et cetera, et cetera. And I went into all the retail outlets and they're there where everybody is packed in. Hardly anybody's wearing a mask. You might go in there and pick up an item of clothing, put it down, someone else then picks it up. And there's no level of kind of social distance. There's no level of kind of being COVID friendly. And you think, it seemed that we were pushing towards Christmas Day. To hell with Christmas Day. It's one day, you know, and you think now we're almost paying for that completely lax time. You know, the photographs of every single major city of having all the streets and the pavements packed with people. And yet my industry was closed, which was in the main, was COVID secure, COVID friendly, with every single bit of kind of advice and protection that's been set up at a great cost.
You briefly touched on the cost there. And the cost for hospitality, just to kind of get their places up to code, has been immense, hasn't it? Like, I remember going to pubs in November and you could see that businesses had invested quite a lot of money in things like outdoor heaters or screens inside restaurants to keep people a bit more socially distant, or things like taking tables out. And the cost is huge, isn't it?
Yeah, huge. Huge. And double-edged as well, you know, that you said there about like taking tables out. When you take the tables out, you lose covers, you lose income. And that's done because you want to operate on a safe basis. And certainly all the feedback that we were getting for all of my sites was how secure people felt being in those sites. And you think, you know, that's kind of what we did and the amount of training that we put into people. And it just drove. And I still get it. I actually wouldn't mind the fact that the hospitality industry was shut down if the same were true of retail. But it felt like, right, let's shut hospitality so we can open retail. Retail that didn't abide by those rules. And in defense of retail, it's almost impossible to do that. But as a result, you think, well, and hospitality was told, well, the spike has happened because of hospitality. Well, it really didn't, you know, and the evidence is sort of there to show that like 3% of all cases came from hospitality, whereas something like 22% came from education, from retail. So you think hospitality was a very easy target to stick into, and still is, really.
So going back to this lockdown, and I briefly touched on it in the last episode, but there hasn't really been a thing in this lockdown, has there? I suppose we've not had a Tiger King. We haven't even had sourdough, Simon. I mean, that was huge, wasn't it, in lockdown one? That was massive. And I know I was slagging off sourdough earlier in the episode, but we just haven't had that thing, that sort of unifying thing that kind of brings us all together, have we? But as we're talking sourdough, did you kind of get pulled into all of that, or is that a bit of a busman's holiday for a chef?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny enough, though, actually. I think that since the whole of this, I think I've fallen in love with cooking again. I've never fallen out of love with it, but I think it's almost like I've renewed my vows a little bit, and I'm really loving kind of cooking at home. So the whole sourdough thing, I mean, I continually took the mickey out of the sourdough thing, you know. I've constantly called it London bread, so you know, it's the whole thing that everybody in the South was making sourdough and then banana bread. But I think it was good, and I think, like, this time we haven't had any of that, because it felt like that first time we go, I'm going to do something that I've not done before. You know, I am going to do this. I'm going to do that. This time I think, I can't be bothered. You know, I know my wife and her friends, every single Friday, they would have a bit of a Zoom meeting. They'd have a bit of a giggle. They'd have a few glasses of wine. And this time they've all said, I can't be bothered. You know, I can't be bothered staring at a screen for 2 hours again. So I think there is that whole thing where everyone's just gone, phew. I mean, it might well be that, you know, that there is a Tom, that there is a sourdough, that there is a banana bread going on. But we're all a bit like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, can't really be bothered.
And weirdly, I have to say, the thing that lockdown has affected most in me is my relationship with cooking. Like, pre-lockdown, absolutely loved cooking. But even now, the spirit just hasn't quite returned.
And has that been on the second one?
It's sort of persisted, I think. I think it's fourfold for me. So it's planning what to eat a week at a time.
Yeah.
I try to shop locally, but then that takes twice as long because you're not going to a supermarket. You're going to independent retailers to try and, you know, support them, but it does take a lot longer.
Yeah.
And then there's the fact that I'm essentially cooking in my workplace, which is weird. And then the final thing is obviously restaurants still aren't open because that gave us some kind of respite from the daily grind of cooking or thinking what you wanted to cook. Even if you get takeaways, you're still eating at home. You're still probably washing up the plates afterwards. It doesn't feel like a treat anymore.
No, and it's funny that that is the biggest thing. I think I miss that more than anything. Even as someone who owns restaurants, I miss going out for dinner. I think you're right. I think that, well, that spontaneity of eating is the thing. You know, you come in with the best intention that you get it right. I'm going to cook tonight. And you go, should go out. I can't really be bothered. Mm. And that, how lovely that is, you know, to have that luxury of doing it, to not be able to think, oh, okay, what can I order off Deliveroo? I'm not going to cook. Oh, yeah, right, okay. Oh, I bought that chicken thing that I'm going to cook. So I don't really want chicken, but I've bought it, so I'm going to have to cook it. Yeah, I think there is an element to that. I mean, I think fortunately I've not really had that because over the years, I very rarely get the chance to kind of cook for the family on a regular basis. And I have kind of enjoyed it. But don't get me wrong, I still will get the days. Right, for example, last night for my dinner, I had a bowl of bran flakes with some sliced banana on it because I couldn't be bothered doing it. that was what I had. And it happens to everyone. The previous 2 days, I did loads of kind of really nice stuff. Last night, can't be bothered. I really can't. But yeah, and the thing, is that the biggest thing you'll find, that almost with every part of your life, I have so much more can't be bothered about myself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say, doing this podcast again, that's sort of my reaction to try and pull myself out of that funk, because we had that period, as we said earlier, in the summer, where things were just a bit brighter, weren't they? And doing a podcast when I could go to the pub or sit outside was honestly the last thing on my mind. And then tier three happened and all that stuff. And it was just a really depressing time. And as you say, couldn't be bothered with anything.
Yeah.
So when this lockdown happened, that's what I sort of wanted to try and do with this podcast coming back, was to try and shake myself up again, really, because you can just keep spiraling, can't you?
Yeah, and I'm finding that hard. You know, I said before that, you know, Sunday brunch is really sort of being my saviour. I mean, I'm spending plenty of time having meetings in the restaurants that are operating takeaway. But if I'm honest, I'm doing it to get myself out of the house.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a huge amount of necessity for me to be there. But just going there and interacting with the team there kind of feels like you're actually living a life a little bit. But even that, there are days I'm going, oh, I can't really be well. And I'm forcing myself to do it. And I guess you feel the same as me. In overall terms, I think I'm very lucky. You know, I think that I've got it absolutely fine. You know, I'm still in work. I have space outside so I can do stuff. I'm fit and well and healthy, all those kind of things. So, you know, so are my family. You beat yourself up a little bit going, pull yourself together and do it. But you can't help what happens. That's the whole thing, isn't it? When you spiral into that ennui of just being fed up of everything, it's very hard to break out of it. No matter the fact that you know, in general terms, you're all right, it's still really hard to kind of like, you know, to break out of it.
I think I'm right in saying that your kids would have been old enough, so you would have avoided homeschooling.
Oh, yeah. I'm very glad that. Yeah. So my son, Hamish, is 17. So he's not got A levels this summer, and then my daughter Flo is 23, so she graduated last summer. But it's been tough for her because her plan was that she wanted to go traveling for a year. She wanted to go to South America. So almost her last year at uni, rather than trying to get a job and get on a career path, it was about, right, you know what? What I'm going to do is I'm going to just work in hospitality, work as many hours as I can, get some good money, save, go to South America. So of course, both sides of that could no longer happen. Once you couldn't work in hospitality, save anyway, and there's absolutely no way that she can go to South America. So it's been tough for her. And then for Hamish, he is now in a situation where he's got his A-levels, but he hasn't got his A-levels. I mean, how on earth do you motivate yourself? You know, you and I are saying as adults, I'm struggling to motivate myself. If you're a 17-year-old boy who's sitting at home, you can't see your mates, you can't see football, which he adores and plays all the time. And you're there going, yeah, okay, but I've got my A-levels, but I haven't got my A-levels. Yeah, I'm really game for this. Whoa, bring it on. It's tough.
I do sometimes wonder, Simon, what the long-term effect is going to be on that generation, because let's be honest, exams are rubbish, right? They are just rubbish. Yeah. But at the same time, it is a tangible thing, isn't it? It's a tangible thing that you can point to and say, this is something I did. This is a record of my achievement. Whereas this generation won't have that. They'll have a version of it, but they won't have the thing that they've been working towards for so long. But as you say as well, this is the time when you have your last day at term, you have that last big blowout before you go to university, or you don't go to university, you start your first job, or you go traveling. And this entire generation have missed out on these vital experiences, haven't
they? Yeah. And this generation, you know, there's years and years of it. You know, you think primary school kids are kind of missing out on that lovely kind of interaction. And it's tough. And, you know, I'm not being outwardly critical of anybody. It's a necessity. We're in a global pandemic, for goodness sake. Millions of people are dying, and that is the thing. And you do have to kind of keep that in reality. And also, I look at it sometimes and think, I can criticize the government all day long. I'm particularly angry about the way they've treated my industry. But if you look globally, I think with the exception of New Zealand, I don't think there's a country in the world that is allowed to show their disinterest, their distaste for what's going on. Every country is slagging off their government because no one's ever been here before. You know, it's a lose-lose situation, isn't it? It's the best time ever to be in opposition, I would say, if you're a politician.
And how are you doing on fitness at the moment, Simon? I've got to say, I'm doing okay. Ish. My wife had recently wanted to do couch to 5K, so I've been doing that with her, and that's been quite nice. But she works in the NHS, so there's a lot of days where she's not here and I'm on my own. And those are the days where I've really, really struggled to find any kind of motivation. How about you? How are you finding it?
I mean, I box. That's kind of my thing. I normally box 3 times a week. So I'm finding that really, really hard. Again, in terms of like what it's doing to my sort of mental health, I'm finding that really difficult. I do something every single day except Sunday. I get up in the morning and I exercise straight away. So I'm doing stuff and I'm working as hard as I can. But it's not the same. I'm missing that ridiculous feeling that you get when you exercise really hard, that the endorphins kick in and you're absolutely shattered. But that feeling of achievement, you know, come back to what I say about kids, that whole thing of, oh, you know what, I really, you know, it's 9 o'clock in the morning. I've done 12 rounds of sparring and I feel on top of the world. I'll take the world on. So that's really, really hard, definitely.
I used to do a lot of classes and I don't know what it says about me, but I miss someone just yelling at me, telling me to do something.
Yeah, but that's the same. I think the same with my box. I'm doing stuff under my own steam and I'm doing some online classes. But, you know, if I don't fancy doing a certain exercise, then I won't do it. You know, it's not like, so, like say someone said, they go like, get out and do 10 more press-ups over my, you know, yeah, it's hard, isn't it? It's just like, it's another step of lethargy.
I mean, Joe Wicks obviously became the nation's PE teacher at one point. Did you ever think about becoming the nation's home ec teacher?
God, no. No. I mean, I've done plenty of stuff online. It's funny though, because I'm always sort of, I think I'm always conscious of the fact that I think when you are in the public eye, I think on one hand, you want to feel that you, oh, this sounds so poncy, that you want to kind of help people and say, look, you know, here, let's do this, blah, blah, blah. But on the other side, I don't want to be the guy that's wearing the hero's cape and say, look how great I am. You know, so I think there's a balance there. And I'm not criticizing Joe, because I think what Joe did was amazing. But I think for someone like me, who is, you know, I'm moderately just below kind of Z in celebrity letters kind of thing, then you sort of think, I don't think anybody really needs to see me every day enthusiastically kind of making my own hummus and banana bread kind of thing. So, you know, I've done so. If I'm cooking something, I think, oh, this is quite a nice dish, I'll kind of do it. Or equally, I'll do it if I'm bored. I'll go, do you know what? I've got an hour to kill. I'll film myself doing this because I will. So no, I have shied away from it. I mean, my agent keeps saying to me, you should do more than that. There's little things that you do really good. I go, yeah, but I don't want to look like some kind of tosser that's telling the world how to live.
If not cooking, then maybe a bit of dancing. You could sort of get those shoes back out again.
If you saw me on Strictly, then you know that would be a really, really bad thing to get anybody. I suppose it made people laugh.
What did you make of the recent series? Do you think you would have enjoyed your time on the show as much in sort of pandemic Strictly?
I felt for all the people that did Pandemic Strictly, because it's one of the greatest experiences I think you can ever have. There are very few things in your life where every single element of it is a positive, and Strictly is pretty much that. You know, from the runners who make your cup of tea, from the guys who drive you to the studio, the pro dancers, obviously, the production team, all the other celebrities. It's brilliant. It's an absolutely amazing experience, and I would never have courted it, but when I got asked to do it, that I've got plenty of friends who've done it, and all of them said, just do it. And I said, but I can't, it doesn't matter, because the experience is just brilliant and you're so far out of your comfort zone. I think that's the, the older we get, then the less likely we are to step outside that comfort zone. And Strictly puts you right in that absolute terror arena. And the first dance I did the Paso Doble, and the start of it is I'm standing on a box on my own, and my dance partner Karen is kind of at the other end of the studio floor, and so I'm dancing the Paso Doble, Simon Rimmer and Karen here, and you cannot hear the band because your heart is genuinely pounding through your ridiculous costume. And at that point, I really reckon if somebody came up to you and said, listen, Simon, you don't have to do this, put your coat on, get off the box, there's a car waiting outside, I would have taken that. It is one of the most terrifying moments of life, but I loved it. Every minute of it was brilliant. It was fantastic.
And they did such a great job in this really strange time. And obviously, they also dealt with a tier change, because they had a small audience, and then that audience disappeared, and then it was just production staff. But I really felt for them that they didn't have so many of the experiences that you guys did, of just that moment where you get it right and the crowd just loses their shit.
Yeah. And I think also just, again, I think one of the things full stop in COVID times is that human interaction. You know, at the end of the day, it's a happy, smiley, jazz hands kind of environment. You just spend your entire time hugging each other, you know, with joy, and not being able to do that, I think, is really tough. And then things like on the Friday night. So what happens on the Friday, you do your first rehearsals in the studio with a band, and it's always Effort Friday is what it's known as when you're kind of doing it. And then on that night, the vast majority of people then stay in a hotel near to the studio. Then you all have dinner together, and you kind of you take the mickey out of each other about what's going on during the day. You swap your war stories for the week. And it's so brilliant. Of course, they weren't allowed to do that this year. And I think just that, they missed out. But it was a brilliant series, you know, and I think Bill Bailey winning it was just fantastic. You know, as an old man myself, seeing somebody of Bill's age win it was just out of this world.
I want to talk about something that we've touched on the show already, but I guess I want to talk about what I think are the two diametric pandemic experience I think you've had. Because on the one hand, I switch on Channel 4 on Sundays and there you are, a comforting, reassuring presence that the world isn't actually so different. And even during the early days of the pandemic, you actually managed to broadcast Sunday Brunch live from your own kitchen.
Yeah.
And Tim did so from, I guess, would you call that a living room? It was honestly hard to tell from his interior design choices.
In fact, I'm sitting in that exact same seat where we broadcast from.
Yeah.
And then Tim did his in his, he was in his front room most of the time. And then sometimes he was in his sort of kitchen diner area. So yeah, he moved around a little bit. I didn't have that luxury because, you know, this were, but funnily enough though, because we did the shows from home and I sat in the kitchen, obviously, it has now become my workspace. So when I knew I was doing this with you today, then this is where I work. I don't like doing it anywhere else because this now feels like my office as well as the kitchen. But we were lucky that we managed to stay on air, and hats off to all the technical guys who got us broadcasting from our houses. I mean, it was hard work, but it was great to stay on air. It was really great. But it was joyous when we went back into the studio. We were like little lambs skipping in the spring that we were, in a proper studio with proper cameras and not having to kind of like see, oh, internet's failed again, right, we'll have to cut there, because we didn't record live when we were at home because we couldn't trust the technology or even the telephone. We couldn't trust anybody's internet connection enough to be able to do it.
What was it like broadcasting during those early days of the pandemic, though? Because I guess you almost had that quintessential pandemic experience where you've been doing a job for so many years, probably down to an absolute T, and then suddenly everything changes and you're literally broadcasting from your kitchen.
It was really exciting, actually. I felt that I think we were quite fortunate because we are quite a laconic, laid-back show anyway, then I don't think, because we're not a shiny shore floor show and we don't have a live studio audience, then it meant that we could really carry on being as stumblingly inadequate as we normally are on kind of on live TV. Whereas if you're something like the Graham Norton show or Jonathan Ross that's used to a live studio audience, then you felt that they missed out on a lot, really, which I think we were kind of quite fortunate. The thing that blew me away was the amount of kind of love and warmth that we got. People saying, oh, it's so great that you're on air. It's really great that, you know, you're still making us laugh on a Sunday morning. And it felt like, you know, don't get me wrong, our job isn't important. You know, we're not kind of saving lives. But it felt like, you know, for the first time, the show had a value in terms of people going, I want normality. Here's that little bit of normality. It's still Tim and Simon talking crap to each other for kind of 3 hours. And, you know, it felt like a good thing. And I think also the show has come out the other side of it, feeling that it's moved on as well.
Did you ever have any hesitation about inviting people into your home? You know, people suddenly looking at your kitchen drawers going, oh, I wouldn't pick those.
A little bit, if only for the fact that when we filmed from here, I was actually waiting for new kitchen equipment. so all the stuff that was in, I would get comments going, God, I can't believe he's got a crappy little electric cooker. It's because I was waiting for a swanky Italian induction hob. That because of the pandemic, the factory shut down, so I couldn't get it. So I was almost sort of thinking, oh God, you know, I thinking, I can't believe that's all he's got. But it was all right. I mean, you know, it's actually quite a nice kitchen. It's quite a nice kitchen to broadcast from. So it was all right. I don't think I'd want anybody else in the rest of the house, but obviously the kitchen is sort of, you know, I spend so much of my time in here anyway.
But as you say, Sunday Brunch did eventually come back to the studio in a COVID safe way. But I suppose Sunday Brunch has changed now quite fundamentally because you obviously have less physical guests and you're obviously doing more of these kind of conversations over video chat like we're doing today. What were the challenges coming back and trying to work out what the show is now?
It's been interesting though, because the good thing about the video chat is all of a sudden then you become global. You know, we've had so many people that we've interviewed, you know, in the States on a regular basis because we have a lot of music on the show. You know, for example, last weekend we had Adam Lambert on the show. So, you know, Adam Lambert's there in Los Angeles looking really, really cool. And then, you know, we've had people from all over the world. We've interviewed Kylie. And that's actually been quite nice that you don't need to do it. And already we're talking about continuing that no matter what. For example, things like the drinks items and the guest chef items. Already we're investigating, well, you know, we could do a chef in the States, or we could do a bartender in Australia. It's kind of quite nice that in some respects it's open doors as well as kind of closing them.
So TV work on the whole as normal as it could have been in these strange times that we're all living in. But as we've talked about earlier in the show, you're also a very successful restaurateur, and this has been the most disruptive time the restaurant industry has ever experienced. And it's something your industry, at least, could never have prepared for. Some of your premises are also in Manchester and Liverpool, which have felt restrictions harder than most. Obviously, all of this is still ongoing, and this story evolves daily. But what has this all been like?
Oh, hideous. Our biggest site is a site called Albert Schloss in the middle of Manchester. Mm. And Albert Schloss is a huge, big venue. It's a big kind of based on kind of big old German beer kellers. We have live music and live entertainment 7 nights a week. It's a big, packed, busy bar. We have a live music venue upstairs. Main hours of our trade are 10 at night till 2 in the morning. So every single one of those descriptions is taken away from you. So that site since the start of the pandemic is down 87% on turnover.
Wow.
And it's a big, big, busy site that turns over a lot of money. So that's been really hard. You know, that's been really, really tough. And then we have a pizza brand called Rudy's, and we've got six of those. They've actually functioned okay, doing just takeaway.
Yeah. But
okay, in terms of they're stemming the wave of losses rather than kind of contributing to them, really. So that's kind of been okay. And you just feel that the joy and love that I have for my industry has been snatched away, and not being able to function that way. And it transcends above kind of finances. You know, we're a relatively strong business. I'm not saying we're indestructible, but we were in a very good place before the pandemic struck. So there's revenue there. There are savings, if you like, there that will kind of keep us going for a certain amount of time. And the government has kind of, you know, added some quite good support mechanisms in terms of finance to our industry. But I mentioned at the very start, I think people losing their jobs has been very hard to take. And just knowing that people who have worked for you for an amount of time, having to let them go has been really, really, really tough. And I don't know what the other side of the industry looks like as well. So, you know, whilst we sit in the situation where you go every week and going past the sites that are closed is quite heartbreaking. You know, the same with anybody's business. It's not just my business. It's not just me. You know, whatever your business is, if your premises are closed and you don't have the people and that whole kind of beautiful kind of business that you had isn't functioning, it's very, very hard to take. And on one hand, as the kind of, you know, as one of the owners of the business, then you've got to stay upbeat and positive, say, yeah, everything will be okay. Where in reality, you're sitting there going, wow, you know, this is our dream. This is our baby. And it can't actually function. And equally, you look at those numbers every week that aren't happening, and you look at projections that are made. You know, when you reach a business that's the scale of ours, then yes, it's still about the excitement of what the brand is, how we function. But there's also a lot of number crunching, you know, no two ways about it. And you look at all those numbers and go, nope, nope, nope. No. And you look at all the red in terms of kind of like where those figures are. And it's tough. And it will continue to be tough for 2 years, I would say, definitely.
And this was an industry that was hit so hard. And yet it was so inspiring in the summer when Marcus Rashford was leading this call to arms on free school meals. And the places that answered that call first was the hospitality industry. And it sort of shows that these places aren't just bars and restaurants, that they're as much community hubs as anything.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good point. I think that people's appreciation of the hospitality industry, I don't mean, and so it should, I just mean, I think that we've all sort of gone, wow, you know what, how much time do I spend? Like, for example, if we weren't in COVID times, probably we would do this in a studio somewhere, then you and I would go and have a pint, go and have something to eat. And that whole thing, that hospitality is that core through everything that we do. And I think when the whole Eat Out to Help Out thing happened, everyone was so excited about being able to do it. And I think that that's what everybody is missing so much. But you're right, the whole amazing work that Marcus Rashford did and is still doing, then the hospitality industry said, yeah, well, you know, we're on board with that. Let's kind of do it. You know, I think that there's been some great things that have happened through hospitality, definitely.
It's obviously tough to say because, you know, we are at a point where restaurants and bars are still closed, as is the entire hospitality industry. And we still don't know for how long. But how do we go about picking up the industry again when we're allowed to?
I think it'll happen really quickly. I think that because it's already in a position, every single venue that's shut is pretty much COVID friendly. So if you just backtrack and go, okay, well, before lockdown, this is how we operated. We could open the doors, if not tomorrow, give it a week to get stock together, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We could open again. And then you hope that as long as it's a one-way trajectory, that you go, okay, well then, okay, at the moment we're on 2 meter distancing. Now it could be 1 meter distancing. We could bring four more tables and we can employ somebody else here. I think it will happen really quickly. And I think the appetite for it is there. You know yourself, the minute that you can go out for something to eat with your other half, you are there. You are absolutely
in a blink of an eye, Simon.
Yeah. And everybody, of course, is planning where they're going to go. I'm sure you know, right? Okay, right. First place, where we're going to go, what am I going to drink, what we're going to eat, where we're going to be. Let's book a table. Can we do that? And I think that that is the reality, that the industry, I think, will gain momentum really, really quickly. But I think that because it's in a good place, it will hopefully be allowed to do it safely. And I would hope as well that every other sector of society has to do the same thing, education, retail, that the restrictions are kind of put in place to enable people to open things safely. So we don't have the short-term fix of everything's great for 2 months and up, figures are spiked again, we're back into lockdown. We have to find a way of not constantly going open, close, open, close, open, close, because that's no way to run any society.
And is there anything that we can do to help places that we love right now?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's been incredible is the number of people who still to this day are buying vouchers for our restaurants, you know. So they'll go, right, okay, you know what, I want you guys to be there when I'm open, so I'm gonna buy a £50 voucher, you know, so there's kind of some revenue coming in, and it does really, really help. I think also, like anything, it isn't always necessarily about kind of finance. I think that if your favorite restaurant is on social media, just send a tweet, send a text, send an Instagram message, whatever. Just say, can't wait for you guys to be open. Really miss it. I think that whole thing that we all crave as human beings. You know, something social media is all about, kind of like, you know, feeling great because somebody actually acknowledged you exist. I think just things like that make a really, really big difference. And you touched on before, Si, about the fact of shopping locally, I think, is another thing outside of hospitality. I think hospitality is more than just me and restaurants and bars. It's about that supply chain. You know, your little independent brewers who are there going, well, I've thrown away gallons upon gallons of beer. I don't want to start brewing any more beer. I don't brew any beer. I can't make any money, blah, blah, blah. So looking at saying, okay, well, who have I got locally? Who can I do that? Where's my farm shop? What can I do about where am I going to buy my fruit and veg from? I mean, you know, all of those things that are almost becoming smaller and smaller. But, and the signs are that that's happening. You know, it's reckoned that most of the suburbs are actually doing pretty well. You know, they're actually doing fine. The city centres are the ones that it's like a zombie apocalypse has happened.
I have to finish up, Simon, by finding out what TV shows have been keeping you going. What have you been loving on telly, Simon?
My viewing habits have changed lockdown to lockdown. On the first one, I did Tiger King, which I think is one of the best bits of telly ever. I binged on Ozark. I rewatched all of The Wire, which I love. So they were my sort of three biggies on that.
Yeah.
This time, I found that I've turned away from kind of binge watching. I want individual components. So, okay, so my trashy go-tos, I love Bangers and Cash.
What's that?
Oh, Bangers and Cash is brilliant. It's about a fantastic classic car auction company in Yorkshire, and it follows the story of some of the cars they get. It's proper, lovely, slow, gentle viewing.
That sounds beautiful.
I'm loving the fact that Grand Designs is back on, because Kevin MacLeod is one of my favourite broadcasters. And I've been binging on Law and Order Special Victims Unit because I love it, and they're standalone episodes, and Ice-T is very, very cool in it. And that on this second one, that's done. Plus, I've watched so much football, I cannot believe it.
You've obviously mentioned football just there. Do you have any predictions for the season? I should point out that we are recording this just before Liverpool play Burnley, but do you have any predictions where Liverpool are going to finish this season?
If you'd asked me on Christmas Day, I would have said we're going to win the league. Today, I can't decide if it might be second, but I still think that... the second half of the season, I think, will come good again. You know what? I've got to say we're going to win the league. I say it every season, we're going to win the league.
Simon, I don't think I can end this podcast on a better note than Liverpool winning the league. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Pleasure. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
I really want to thank Simon for that episode. It's been my ambition on this podcast from day one to have different voices and different industries as well, and to hear about some of the realities facing the hospitality sector with such searing honesty from Simon. It was a really sobering experience. If you can, please support your local places in whatever way you can, because right now they really do need our help. If you want to hear more from Simon, and of course you do, he's a Liverpool fan, and we should always hear from Liverpool fans. He also has a brilliant podcast, and it's called Grilling, and that has some great guests from the world of food. Do check that out on wherever you get your podcasts. Just before we go today, I have to say the response to the Callum Scott Howes episode of the podcast was simply unreal. It was officially our most listened to episode of the podcast so far. We hit 26 in the podcast charts, which is just nuts. It's our highest entry ever. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, please do go and check it out. I honestly mean it. It is a slice of joy. Please continue to spread the word about this podcast. And if you're new, please subscribe to get these episodes first. The next episode will be dropping again in 2 weeks' time on Tuesday, the 23rd of February. That's it from me. Thank you again for listening. But until the next time, please stay indoors.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.